Hi, it's still Sunday. Let me see if I can do the Haftorah now before I go off to somewhere. I expect it's going to be a very busy week, so I'm going to do as many of these as I can to fulfill the obligations before we jump into Pesach stuff. Obviously, it's a week before Pesach, and today we're going to do the Haftorah, which is sponsored, as I mentioned last week, by the Pollocks from Columbus, Ohio, and Baltimore, Maryland. And again, this is the second of two. This is an honored birthday of the granddaughter, Tikva Esther Pollock, in West Orange, being 21 years old, so happy birthday. And also, as I said before, in commemoration of the, as Paul is saying, commemoration of the yard sale of my father and great-grandmother, Shmuel ben Zachariah on one hand, sweet Cyril Bas Reb Dov on the other hand, both passed away in Rosh Chodesh Nisan, obviously not in the same year, and he has a story of bringing the pot. Remember we mentioned this last week. Let's put it this way. He expresses the hope that somewhere in Shemayim, they're having the chicken soup, grandmother's chicken soup, which was delicious. Everyone has, not to be funny about it, although it is funny, everyone, if you think about it, has their idea of what, paradise is, what Gan Eden is. None of them are correct, as the Rambam points out, because it's something no one's ever seen. It's not something subject to sight. So everybody uses different parables, right? The tzaddikim were sitting there and dancing, or they're sitting under, halos, or things like that. I mean, really. And there are other versions, and so on and so forth. So chicken soup is as good as any. The shoemaker imagines Gan Eden to be a place where the shoes never wear out. You know, the cook imagines it'll be the best food, and everybody will always be hungry and never get tired of the food. And, you know, I'm sure the history professor figures Gan Eden, you talk on and on and on and on and on, and nobody gets bored. Everybody makes up their own, idea of what it's going to be. But in that regard, we do pay tribute to their memory. And all joking aside, and we take a look at this Haftorah, which it defines Shabbos HaGadol. Because I don't think there's a special laning in the Chumash. We're going to do Parshas Mesorah. But in the Haftorah, we're going to do not the Haftorah, usually Parshas Mesorah, but instead, the famous one of Shabbos HaGadol. Now, the problem is, Haftorah doesn't seem to have anything to do with Shabbos HaGadol. Right? It's not a reference to Yitzhak Mitzrayim, or the Karm Pesach, or Moses, or any of that kind of stuff. Not that I recall, anyway. Why pick this Haftorah, whoever chose it? There are ways of answering that. I think I've done it in the past years. But sitting here now, the straightforward answer goes to the following fact. That in the end, with reference to Pneim HaGodol HaGibur Vanura, Hine Anochi Sholoch Echem, how's it go? It's El Yonavi Lifnei Bo Yom HaGodol HaGibur Vanura, or something like that. Then I'm going to send the prophet Eliyahu v'heshiv levos before the great day, meaning the Geula. V'heshiv levos abonim b'leibonos abonim, bonim alovos, and I'll bring in harmony and unity. Otherwise, I'll kill everybody. How's it go? Let me get it here. Here it is in Malachi, of course, as we all know. And after a long speech, the prophet Malachi, he says, after Zichur Torah's Moshe Avdi, Hine Anochi Sholech Lechem Selyon Novi, Lefnei Bo Yom Hashem Agor Lebanero, Veheshiv Levos Abonim Lebomos Abonim, Pen Ogov Ovavi Kesi Skar Tzcher, because if you don't do that, I'm going to kill everybody. Right? In other words, we'll make the unity among the Jews if I have to kill them to do so. Right? So that, of course, nowadays is a push-up shot. It will take a divine miracle to bring unity among the Jews. Because everybody's convinced that he's right and the other one's wrong. That's just who we are as a people. We have a lot of energy and therefore the Jews are able to accomplish a lot, but we always have a lot of internal strife, which stifles our ability to do more. And as I said before, God says I'm going to have to send a special prophet, Eliyahu HaNavi no less, to introduce harmony. So Eliyahu HaNavi will come, let's say he comes tomorrow, and he'll say, to the frum, not frum, you have to get along for this and this reason. And he'll say to the chassidim and the misnagdim and the ashkenazim and the sfaradim and this group and that group, Lubavitch and Bells and all the rest of it, Heshiv Levavos Abonim Levavoso. Now, on this side of the mountain, sitting here right now, every group thinks like this. Sure, he'll make everybody like me. I'm sure the Lubavitch, this figure, Eliyahu will come and make everybody Chabad. I'm sure Avadi Yosef, if he was around, he'll say, Eliyahu will come and make everybody Sephardi because we're the right way. And so on and so forth. I wouldn't doubt that the Reform, if they believe in Eliyahu HaNavi at all, they'll say everybody will come and they'll show Reform Judaism the right way. In other words, nobody imagines that there'll be a harmonizing of different opinions, but rather the disappearance of all opinions except mine. Because I'm the only right one, everybody else is wrong. And they should acknowledge in abject humility the wrongness of their position. They should feel terrible that they dared to disagree with him in the first place, and Eliyahu HaNavi will show him, which of course is not what the pasuk says. It says, Heshiv Levavos Abonim Levavos Levavos. They'll restore the heart of one to the other, meaning they'll introduce harmony among them. Harmony means I feel one way, you feel another way. I belong to one group, you belong to another group, and we'll work it out. You understand? Work it out. There were 12 tribes. That means it's not one way. It could mess up, like happened with Joseph and all the rest of it. One way. That's very interesting because how does this have to do with Shabbos HaGadol? I mean, it says Lifnei Yom Haba Yom Hashem HaGadol Vanora. So it's HaGadol. And there are many theories that say the reason you call Shabbos HaGadol is because of the name of the Haftarah. Even though they're well aware that according to the calendar, Shabbos HaGadol was the day that the Jews took the Korban Pesach, as we all know. And they committed themselves by infuriating the Egyptians. I mean, we know this, right? But somehow or other, you're supposed to combine the theme in our Haftarah today, which is Malachi, who's a later prophet, with the story of Pesach, the upcoming Passover, which is around the corner. So how do you do that? So it seems to me that there is a couple of very interesting aspects over here. There is a strong Jewish tradition that the final Geula will replicate in many ways the Yetzias Mitzrayim. That's kind of fundamental to rabbinic thought. They always look to the past to define the future. So even though they say history never repeats itself, I think the Chazal do not agree. I think they see history, or meta-history rather, God's hand in history does repeat itself in essential points. And so, if there be a Geula, there'll be some kind of Shibbut Mitzrayim. I know exactly what. But there's some subjugation at the hands of strangers. Doesn't mean it's exactly identical with what happened in Egypt. One second. It doesn't mean it'll be exactly identical to what happened in Egypt, but it'll bear strong resemblance in certain aspects. Whenever you say one thing is like another, you don't mean exactly. After all, now you have technology and then they didn't, for example. No, things will be different. Having said that, they'll be striking in the meta-historical patterns to be remarkable congruity. Right? Again, the Ramchal wrote a book, others have written, from a Kabbalistic perspective, and how the next Geula will replicate, or at least resemble, in important aspects, the Yetzias Mitzrayim. So, do we have a Pharaoh today? I don't know. You know, we have oppressors, where people like to do us in. As I mentioned the other day, we sure as heck, right now, at this moment, as I'm speaking, are going through a period of Ayareu, Osana Mitzim, Bayanunu. We're going through a period of extreme demonization. Not that long ago, it was politically incorrect to see something anti-Semitic. Not anymore. Right? Not anymore. This Iran thing is interesting. We don't know how it's going to turn out. When the Jews were in Egypt, they seem to have been pretty profoundly disunited. 12 tribes and different types. But on the other hand, they had in common, they were a community of fate, as they call it. In other words, they were all enslaved. So one thing that they had in common, they went through the same tortures. If you go through the same privations and tortures as the other person, that creates a past that's common. And if it has a good ending, that creates a narrative that turns a bunch of disjuncted and different tribes, and different groups, into a single group. We call that nationalism today, right? I mean, you have the 13 colonies, for example. So, you know, Pennsylvania and Rhode Island are very different than North Carolina, South Carolina, things like that. But they all underwent the same American Revolution and stuff like that. And they all went to the privations of the struggle against England, let's say, whatever, however you understand it. And that made a common past, right? Just as happened with the Jewish people, that common past later on broke with the Civil War. Like happened with us, the Yoram B'Nevach. But in the case of America, the Malchus based over, so to speak, the national government was able to suppress the rebellion and restore the unity, the political unity. In the case of the Jews, it didn't happen. We weren't strong enough to do that. So you see these patterns. But in order to unite the tribes, it was necessary to have an unusual figure in Moshe Rabbeinu, who brought to the game a very thorough secular education as an Egyptian prince, a military education, and who, as we know, however it worked out, attained the heights of Nevuah. Notice when he said God talked to me, it was true. And he proved it by the 10 plagues. And so, in the case of the original Shiva Mitzrayim, you had a common suffering. And then you had somebody emerge from the ranks who was a real Navi. And because of the unusually potent nature of his prophetic powers, he was able to get amazing things done and had a tremendous roshim on everybody else. No, it wasn't just another Navi. Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, combined a lot of qualities into one person. That's why he was able to lead them out of the country. And of course, through the Nisim and the Flos and the Yamsuf and afterwards, and give them a direction and admonish them and chastise them when necessary and pray on their behalf when they were doomed as necessary. And the people knew this, and even though Moshe had his detractors, because, as I said before, Lev Avos Al Bonim, Bonim Avos, the Jews are a contentious and quarrelsome people. Atem Am Kshei Yarif, you know, it's who we are. And Moshe, although the Chumash does emphasize the trouble that the Jews gave him, nevertheless had a track record that most of the time he was able to get the Jews to march in the same direction, which is amazing. It's not necessarily true that all Jews were so hotsy-tots about leaving Egypt, but he got them out anyway. I'm talking about the 20% that left. We know that they had trouble along the way and complained about the food and the water and this and that and the other. But, you know, and we all know the details of that story, but he got them out anyway. Notice he said, we're heading to the land of Canaan, and he got there. I know he died at the gateway, but you know what I mean. He got him there. Now, therefore, when you think about it, the original Geula was a combination of Nisim and a lot of complaints and human politicking, which was necessary to get the Jews to do the things that they were supposed to do. It wasn't simply to say, oh, there was Makkos Bechoros, therefore we're going to follow you, Moshe, blindly. And, you know, wherever you say to go, we go. How does he say in Tehillim? Bono Beish B'mayim. Will follow you through fire and water. They did not do that. Or at least, let's put it this way, they didn't do it willingly. But they did it. You understand? They did it. So, the original Karm Pesach and all the rest of it, I mean, they did it. There were problems along the way? Yes. But they were willing to go. That is the characteristic almost of the biblical ideal, Geula. It's not a seamless story and a simple story in which this guy Moses appears and he says, God has sent me to redeem you and follow me. And Mila Shemi Lai, and they all march off. It was much more complex than that. And it had to do much more of politics in the Aristotelian sense of getting different groups, you know, to agree to have a common action. And at that time, there were Mamash Shvatim, Reuben, Shimon, Levi, Yehudi, Yisachar, Zebulun, and so forth. So it seems, based on the Haftorah, they're going to have the following parallel. According to this version, what you have in our Haftorah, Shabbos HaGadol, the Geula is going to be preceded by the appearance of another super prophet. It's not going to be Moshe, but it's going to be of all the Nevi'im, and there are many, the one prophet that most closely resembles Moshe. And of course, Eliyahu HaNavi. If you study the career of Eliyahu HaNavi, and I'm sure I've talked about it in the past, to the point that Eliyahu HaNavi goes to Mount Sinai and has a revelation there of his own. It's not the same thing, nevertheless, but he's the only Navi that gets summoned by God to go and have a one-to-one session on Har Sinai. Well, that's Moshe Rabbeinu. There's nobody else. And there are other aspects in the career of Eliyahu HaNavi. As I mentioned the other day, Eliyahu HaNavi is not just a regular prophet who is a messenger boy. As glorious as that task is, to be a messenger of a telegram sent from the Ribbono Shel Olam is pretty impressive. But on the other hand, rather, Eliyahu does his own miracles, including Tchias HaMesim and things like that, and a whole bunch of miracles. And when he dies, he doesn't die exactly. He's translated to heaven in a chariot of fire. In other words, he doesn't die. So in that respect, he's sort of superior to Moshe, who dies and is buried. Eliyahu does not die. He's not buried. We don't know what happened to him. The Mefarshim are trying to figure out, as I said before, we use the English word translate, which means to go from one state of being to a different state of being. But we don't know what we mean by that, other than the very externalistic type of description. Hinei anochi sholech lechem es Eliyahu HaNavi. And God says in our Haftorah that before the second Geula comes, the final Geula, it will not be possible to get the Jews together, even if the time has come. So, for example, let's say tomorrow, the time had come. Tomorrow. Honestly speaking, do you really think most of the Jews would want to pick up and go to Eretz Yisrael and live a life under Mashiach and all the rest of it? They don't want to. They're not from. They don't feel comfortable with that kind of environment. Suppose I were to tell you, as the Satmar imagined probably, the Mashiach is coming tomorrow and everybody's going to live like Satmar Hasidim in Eretz Yisrael or some other group. The others don't want to do that. If that's my choice, I'll stay in Golis and live the way I'm living. I mean, am I right or am I wrong? We talk in glorious terms. We get down to nitty-gritty, how are you going to pull it off? And the prophet Malachi acknowledges that in our Haftorah, and he says, you can't have a Geula until there's some kind of reconciliation among the different parts of the Jewish people. What he calls the Lev Ovis al Bonim Malovis. He speaks in terms of generation gap. It's the same thing in terms of any kind of tribalistic gap. Or today we would say group gap. We have Shvatim today among Jewish people. We just don't call them Reuben, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. It's called Orthodox, Conservative, Reform, and secular, as I said before. Ashkenaz, Sephardim, Hasidim, Misnagim, and so on and so forth. We got plenty of Shvatim. In fact, we have a mania for tribalism. Ad kedei kach, you know and I know. You could live in the same town, and there are two shuls, and one's across the street from the other, and they feel like different Shvatim. Right? Oh, you go to that shul. We all know the famous joke, the Robinson Crusoe said, this is a shul I wouldn't walk into. It's part of who we are. And it's intensified by the disintegration of the autonomous coercive community that used to exist once upon a time, the Gehillah, which had the power to make sure everybody, by main force, was dominating the same shul, I mean that, and adhering to the same rules and all the rest of it. The system was very far from perfect. That's an understatement. But the idea that all the Jews in this town all go to the same way or do the same thing, that was basic to the idea of the Kehillah of old. Not today. The opposite. You have a town, could be a large Jewish community in terms of thousands of people, and everybody does their own thing. Is there such a thing called Yerushalayim? Or a thousand groups? Is there such a thing called Eretz Yisrael? Even Bnei Brak, to be honest? And that's how it goes. And so how do you want to break that? There's no way, as far as I can see, there's no way you could break that if you go B'derech HaTeva. How are the... I'm serious, Nick. Now, how are you going to persuade those Jews who are pro-Hamas right now that they're all wrong and they should all go and change and switch to the other side? How do you do that? Right? If you flatter yourself by saying, oh, I can do it, chances are you're being self-deceptive. They hold what they hold. They see things different. It's a Nebuch. They didn't grow up Jewish. You know, they didn't have a chinuch. I mean, I get the reasons. But nevertheless, how are you going to change that? And yet, we don't say, in Judaism, that the Gula is only going to be for Orthodox Jews. Where does it say that? Right? Think about what I'm saying. It doesn't say it's going to be for one group. It's going to be for everybody. So how are you going to have everybody? Now, a lot of people usually think like this. Well, it's not going to happen in our time. And maybe in the future, you know, the non-from, those who leave, will leave and will assimilate and disintegrate and become part of another group. And the only ones we left back are the from. And they'll be the ones that will be in the gula. That's an easy way and a very self-satisfying way. It doesn't say that anywhere. Plus, it contradicts the idea, what you're supposed to believe, which is ani mam b'munu shleimu b'yis ha-mashiach v'yalpi shi'is meim kol ze'achakel b'choyim shalobo. So you're supposed to really, I mean, this is part of Judaism. You're supposed to believe the Mashiach can come today or tomorrow. So here we are in 2024, in April. It's the middle of a war in Israel. The Jews are divided big time. You know that. And you're telling me you believe the Mashiach will come tonight. How's it going to happen? Right? You're telling me they're going to take away everybody's Bechira. That's not what our tradition tells us. So it's going to have to be preceded by the appearance of an unusual Navi, as happened in Mitzrayim. And this Navi is going to have the ability to like bowl everybody over with the majesty of his personality, I see, whatever you call it. I don't know. And will therefore do Heshiv Levois Abonim Abonim Alovis. It's remarkable because it forces us to consider what would happen if the Mashiach Taka came tomorrow. And I don't think most people are ready for that. We pay lip service to it, and maybe we imagine that when it happens, it'll be in some kind of miraculous way that all the bad things will turn good. But it's not the way our Masorah gives it. There'll be a process of transformation. And our Haftorah, the last Pesukim over there, Mamish to talk about that. And it says, if that proves impossible, if Eliyahu Navi came tomorrow and started to work on Heshiv Levois Abonim Abonim Alovis and reached a dead end, right? Which I could hear, right? Then Hashem says, well, then I just kill everybody, right? Pen, what's the expression? Pen Ovo V'Kesis Kol Tzcherim. I'll come and strike the whole world with destruction. Today, we got the atomic weapons and all that other business. And who knows what other kind of weapons are coming up tomorrow. It's the easiest thing in the world to say, I'm going to Hikesis Kol Tzcherim. You know, and if you look at the classic Mefarshim from long ago, what does it mean? You'll strike a blow on the world? It'll be a Tzcherim, it'll be destruction. So they probably spiritualized it or metaphorized it or something like that, which I can understand. But today, with the modern science, it's the easiest thing in the world. It's too dangerous a world we live in. If Iran had the bomb, Achenvei, and maybe they do for all I know, Achenvei, because some nuts will use it. And next thing you know, Bombs will be dropping all over the place, and it'll be goodbye world. You see? So, I can't know exactly how the final goon is going to work out. But, I know that just as happened in time Mitzrayim, there had to be a lot of spade work and hachonos, preparing the way for the gula, characterized by the figure of Eliyahu HaNavi. So something like that is going to have to precede the final gula that we have now. This is very much a message that, in my opinion, forces people to think about the story of Pesach in a very serious way, but the obstacles had to be overcome to get everybody together. And therefore, it's very tzugepas for saying Shabbos HaGadol, for the Shabbos preceding Pesach, to put you in the mind to think about the Passover story in concrete, albeit difficult ways. At least that's my opinion. Anyway, I want to thank the Pogs once again. And happy birthday on the one hand, and the Shama Shabbali on the other hand. And with that, I bid you all a good day.